You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Charlotte LaCroix about dealing with client complaints. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. LaCroix earned her Doctor of Veterinary Medicine from UC Davis in 1988, after which she worked as an equine practitioner until her love of advocacy led her to earning a law degree at the University of Pennsylvania in 1997. Her professional career has been dedicated to helping veterinarians and other members of the industry navigate the quagmire of risks and challenges within the veterinary profession. Dr. LaCroix owns Veterinary Business Advisors, a national consulting firm for veterinary business and legal issues. She has over 20 years of experience assisting veterinarians and lectures extensively on business and legal issues, as well as facilitates continuing education seminars nationwide. Dr. LaCroix volunteers for organizations including AVMA, AHA, AAEP, New Jersey VMA, and the Pennsylvania VMA. She is currently board member of the Veterinary Innovation Council and the Veterinary Virtual Care Association. Welcome, Dr. LaCroix. It's good to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grice, for giving me the opportunity to share a few tips with your audience today.
Many clients seem less satisfied with veterinary care these days. Some of them are just out of control, and they're harder to please. What are the different ways that a client may make a complaint?
So, you know, I think people are less satisfied because of multiple reasons, right? Perhaps the cost of care is higher, so they have higher expectations. Perhaps they're not really from an agrarian society, you know, environment, so they expect more, and they're maybe influenced by television and social media and, you know, what those expectations are. Perhaps our veterinarians could do a better job communicating as to what the expectations should be, and, you know, that's time-consuming, and I think that's probably where we fall short, is like there's only so many hours in the day, and communicating takes time, right, and you're focusing on providing proper medicine, and perhaps follow-up. We don't follow up with our clients to see perhaps the progress on how the horse is doing, and people may not feel as connected, and therefore, you know, when they're connected, they're frustrated. They may have high levels of anxiety because they don't know what's going on. So all of that things, I think, and then also we're in a society of accountability. Like, somebody's got to be held responsible. There's no such thing as just, you know, medicine or health. Like, you just, you know, like, well, they were never sick before. Well, of course, lots of things, mammals were not sick before until they were sick. You know, even people, they're not sick until they're sick. So I think the root of it is communication, but the solution is communication as well. And this is hard for veterinarians because we hate conflict, right? And so we tend to, when there's something aggressive or assertive or conflict, we tend to retreat or ignore it or deny it and then move on and hope it'll just go away. But we all know that sometimes this is a snowball effect. It actually gets worse. So, you know, hopefully we would hope that if a client is upset, they would come to us first, or they would go to the practice owner, perhaps, if you're the associate. I mean, certainly that happened to me several times where, you know, they just jump up and then jump and pass you and talk to your boss, and your boss, like, what happened? You're like, why didn't they just call me? And it's usually just, you know, kind of a misunderstanding. But if they don't do that, and it's so easy to file a complaint against your veterinarian, you just Google, how do I file a complaint, or how do I sue my veterinarian? So basically, Dr. Grice, there's two courses of action, right? Assuming that somebody's just skipped over, or maybe they did try to communicate with their veterinarian and just they don't feel like it got resolved. So They could try to find an attorney who would take on their case, in which case they would need an expert, an actual licensed veterinarian, to provide an opinion. But that's costly. Most attorneys do not take this on contingency, which means it's an hourly rate, and it is what it is. Now, in horses, and particularly if there's personal injury in horse with, you know, somebody getting hurt, of course, the dollar amounts are much higher, and there you might find an attorney to take it on contingency. It kind of would depend how much money's at stake, but usually there's not enough money at stake for it to be worth their while. And then you have to find the veterinarian who's going to look at the medical records and the circumstances and say, yeah, you know, I think your veterinarian fell short here. And there's some states, in fact, you can't even bring a cause of action unless you have like a document called an affidavit of merit. So New Jersey is a perfect example in this. And I think it's a really good kind of hurdle that people, you know, because people are sometimes mad and they just talk to lawyers and, you know, and try to create something out of nothing. But in New Jersey, if you want to bring a cause of action against a veterinarian, you have to have an affidavit of merit, which is a letter from a veterinarian that says, you know, your veterinarian fell short. So that's the common law court action. The other one, which is actually the one that's probably most likely, a lot easier for the client. They don't have to hire an attorney. They file a complaint with the State Board of Examiners, and that, you know, can be done online. And they just explain their narrative, and then boards have to investigate the client's narrative. And these narratives, you know, would be, you know, my veterinarian didn't do this or whatever it is. And the board, as you know, is made up of veterinarians, and it's also often, depends on the state, but it's often also made up of non-veterinarians. And then they have to take on, you know, they have to take these complaints seriously. They may send out an investigator. They'll ask for medical. You'll get a letter as a veterinarian asking for medical records, asking for your side of the story. Sometimes the inspector just shows up to investigate. And probably the worst idea would be like, oh, go away, I didn't expect you to come, because, you know, the government is regulatory and they won't take kindly to that. So if you ever do get inspected, and let's say that it's a staff member that says, look, the veterinarian's not here. I'll call the veterinarian. Please, you know, come in. You know, how can I help you? You know, you have to be really cooperative, because they will get access to all the information one way or the other. And the more difficult we make it, the less, you know, they're people too, and they will subjectively use that against you. So that is the second. And this is where I think it gives me an opportunity to talk about insurance. So when you have veterinary malpractice insurance, you need the insurance that covers you for a tort action, but you also need insurance that covers you for administrative proceedings, because that's the state board. And many insurance companies do not have coverage for administrative proceedings, or if they do, you have to pay an extra premium for that. So because
is that called license defense?
Yeah, so PLIT or AVMA PLIT calls it license defense, but other insurance companies call it other things. And so you do want to make sure you get that coverage. And when you investigate the type of coverage that they provide, you actually want to make sure that you have coverage at the onset. Like if you need help to respond to the state board, that's when you need a lawyer to help you. Because some of these insurance companies, they'll say, well, once you have a hearing, then we'll come and help you. But by the time you've had a hearing, it's probably too late. You really want somebody to help you in writing the response letter.
That sounds terrifying. And you can get online 24/7. You could do it on Christmas at midnight when Santa's coming down the chimney. Any time of the day, right?
Oh, it's on an internet, right? So it might be Santa for some and it's cold for others.
Right. So somebody could like have a couple of too many glasses of wine, decide they're mad. And once they do that, they can't take it back, right?
Right. Like, no, they can't. That's right. Because it's driven by the duty to, you know, certainly to investigate. So it could be those circumstances. But many times also it's people, you know, they talk to each other and then they get each other riled up. Oh, like, I can't believe that happened. Yep. You know, my brother's a lawyer. You should talk to him. And
you should file a complaint.
Yeah. And that lawyer has no idea about veterinary malpractice, right? So it's just like it just gets all a dust bowl, if you will. And that's why the best thing to do is when you have awareness that a veterinarian is upset, I mean, a client is upset, you should reach out to the client if they haven't reached out to you and say, look, I understand that you're upset. You know, I'd like to talk to you about it. Are there any questions I can answer? Because it's, you know, it's miscommunication or lack of communication that is really the genesis of a lot of these complaints.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
If somebody makes a complaint, how will the veterinarian know? Like, do they get a letter? Do they get a phone call? Does somebody knock on the, like, what should people be freaking out about at night at 3 o'clock in the morning when they wake up?
Well, usually you're going to get a letter. So you'll get a letter from an attorney that will be asking for your medical records. Generally, that's kind of going to be the first sign. Or the client is asking for the medical records. That should always make you suspicious. And this is why it's really important to train your staff to say, look, if anybody calls and asks for the medical records, you know, find out who it is and let me know, because I want to call that person and ask them why they want the medical records. Maybe they're moving to another state and it's benign, right? But maybe that'll open up the door to say, well, you know, I was really disappointed in the services that I received from your practice. And then that opens up the conversation. If it's the state board, you'll get a letter from the state that says that we are investigating you and here's your opportunity to write down your narrative. We want a copy of all the medical records, x-rays, lab findings, whatever, you know, whatever involved. And I think one thing we have to be really careful when you write, and hopefully nobody in your audience will ever get one of these letters, but this is why you do need to be coached in responding to these letters, because sometimes veterinarians say too much, or they say it so it's interpreted the wrong way, or they're indignant, or they're arrogant, or, I mean, there's the tone of the letter. And what I usually tell my colleagues, that I say, look, your response should be like a soap. Subjective assessment, subjective objective assessment in the plan. Just tell them what happened. And if the client, you know, because sometimes the client is their own obstruction, right? Like, you recommend something to the client, they're like, nah, let's go ahead and wait, or that it's really they stopped you from doing what you thought. Like you said, you know, I really think we should do x-rays. And they said, well, let's just wait. And it, you know, the waiting was not a good idea. So in your medical records, especially if there's a client does not follow your advice, you actually want to write that down.
Yeah, medical records. There was a whole session at AAEP on medical records, and boy, what people said was, if you had a board complaint and you gave them your records and you hadn't done anything wrong, but your records didn't meet the standard, they're just gonna like run with it.
Oh yeah, that's an easy $1,500 fine, you know, if you don't. I mean, at a minimum, that's what's going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, and a lot of equine practitioners they use invoices as their medical records. That's really an indirect way of trying to figure out what you were thinking. And when your medicine is being assessed, somebody just is trying to get into your brain. It's a logical algorithm. They just want to see the rationale. And by the way, you don't have to be right. And it's okay to have the wrong diagnosis. That's not malpractice to have the wrong diagnosis. What's malpractice is for people not to understand how you got to your treatment plan and your conclusions, and you can't substantiate, like, okay, I can see why you went through that differential diagnosis first, even though the correct one is someplace else. You know, that's why the third veterinarian down the line is always the smartest, because the first went down the, like, checked off the box, the various, the other,
right.
You know, certainly different. So I do want to make that point that being wrong doesn't make you malpractice. What really gives us malpractice is people can't follow from A to, like, how did you get there? Because I can't follow it from the symptoms I think you were presented with, but I'm not really clear because they're not even in your medical records. I mean, even one-line SOPRs would be, you know, amazing.
So if somebody gets one of these letters from the state board, because it sounds like that'll be the most common thing because it's easy for clients, do they immediately call their licensed defense, their PLIT? Like, what's the first thing to do?
That's a really good question, because, you know, us veterinarians, we tend to be independent, like, I'll figure it out myself.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to tell anybody because it'll raise my rate. So number one, most insurance are group policies. So your one claim will not increase your rate. Now, if there are a lot more claims in general, yes, that will increase your rate, but you yourself is not going to increase the rate. So you have an incentive to go ahead and, you know, at least inform your insurance company. And if you don't inform your insurance company, it could actually compromise your defense. So they might say, you mean you had a letter from the state board 6 months ago and you responded and you've been having this dialogue back and forth and you never let us know? Same thing with a tort action. And so, yes, you should call your insurance company, let them know that it's happening, let them know if they have an attorney, you know, as part of the plan that would help you write the letter or review the letter before you go ahead and send it back.
Yeah, always a good idea to have somebody, I think, review your letter, because sometimes what you think is very clear just because you were there. Mm-hmm. So you know what happened, but somebody else reading it might not. So those are the steps if this happens to you, but what are the ways, we talked about communication, how can we prevent clients, I mean, communicate, probably document too.
Yeah, I think communicate, document. Also, the use of informed consents is valuable as well. So when you're, I mean, particularly any surgery, of course, or any invasive procedure, you know, even if you do a castration in the field, that should come with the consent, you know, those animals, you know, anesthetic deaths happen. So, you know, that was all. But the key with informed consent, you can't just give them the paper and say, oh, here, this is a consent, sign it. It does have to come with some kind of explanation of some of the risks involved. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're just trying to inform somebody of those risks or what they can expect or what's probably or likely to happen, so that it's an awareness issue. And people are disappointed when it doesn't match what they thought that they had conjured in their heads.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely. So if you had a client who, you know, was obviously upset, maybe even angry and sort of getting stirred up and giving you a lot of sort of negative communication from their part toward you saying, I'm going to call the state board, like a threat, is there any way to just sort of bring that? Is there language to bring that threat down, to just settle people down?
Yes, I think, you know, of course, that is your prerogative, but is there an opportunity for us to have a discussion on the set of circumstances? That, I mean, that's not all going to happen one way, you know, one way or the other. But I would like to, you know, to give us both the opportunity to discuss, you know, the set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yes, trying to see their perspective too, you know, yeah.
And showing empathy. And, you know, and then there's this old rule, like, don't ever say you're sorry. You can be sorry for the set of circumstances without being sorry for what you did. Right. And by the way, if you actually did do something, like, you know, you did something wrong, you definitely want to call your insurance company, but we are encouraged or to actually admit it and say, look, we made a mistake here. And the mm-hmm. number one thing that the people want to hear after, like, we made a mistake and we are very, very sorry, is this is what we are doing so this never happens again. Most people sue not for the money, but because they actually think somebody's trying to hide something and they want to make sure it never happens again. So you, the first thing that comes out of your mouth after the "I'm sorry" is, "This is what we are doing. We are investigating this and this is what we are doing so this never, never happens again."
Yeah, I think I've read that in some of the human medical literature about saying you're sorry and making those changes so that something like that doesn't happen again. I think that's how they came up with handing you the Sharpie pen and saying, "Please mark which leg we're chopping off," or what, you know, "This is the one we're putting your artificial joint in," or whatever. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today about this whole process and minimizing client complaints?
So I think what I'd like to share is that, and I know this is hard, but try not to take this as a personal attack on you, right? This is how somebody's interpreting a result that they did not expect. And medicine, you know, if medicine was so easy to practice, it'd be done by a computer, right? And it medicine is an art, and things don't always go the way we would like them to go. And horses are certainly unpredictable as well. And, you know, it's part of the practice of veterinary medicine. And what I mean by don't take it personally is, you know, we were just talking about this, is the people that, you know, people that are leaving this profession. And I would hate for this to be a reason for people that are leaving the profession. There's, you know, and there's no question that to be an equine practitioner requires perseverance and stamina and grit. But you have so much to offer to your equine patients and to the, you know, the horse owning community. And I mean, I think people are less grateful by nature. We're just in that type of society. And that's just a consequence of it. That does not mean you're not an excellent veterinarian.
Those are really good words for a lot of equine practitioners to hear, because it does sometimes feel personal, and it does sometimes feel like you're just never enough, or you can never do enough, and they still won't feel like you've done a good job. So those words, I think, are really helpful.
Focus on all those horses you have helped, which is a lot more than the ones that, you know, went south.
I know. And take out the box of thank you letters when you're having a bad day.
Yes.
Read one of the cards where somebody just says such nice things, you know? So thank you, Dr. LaCroix. And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.